You threw the ticket. Everybody didn't take it, you know.
Well, what I want to know is which one.
Yes, that's the one we got.
The last one that.
Everybody took it.
Father only that would be the class last was time. Here last time. And so a third of them took it and the rest of them are finishing it now.
What did we do? You mean the one you went over last time?
No. Isn't there, am I not returning something?
Yeah, the one we took there.
You're returning one on theology, aren't you?
For those who were here. For those that were took it, see, but only a third of the class was here, Father.
Well.
What's with the other one?
Worship
and
ministry.
Well, a month ago, everybody was here. Where did they take them?
Yeah, we didn't take them
on the theology. A month ago, worship and ministry and the one on...
No, have you got these?
Jesus Christ.
Have you got those papers?
We went through that on the tape.
Yeah, that's the one you went over the last time for those who were here. But see, about a third of them, only a third of them were here last time.
Yeah. For those who were not here.
Won't the others get that class tape?
Yes.
Well, apparently there's some confusion, so... In any case, you should get back the last quiz that you took. Okay, have you got that back?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody got theirs back?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Have we gone over it?
Mm-hmm. We did in class, and we went over it in tape.
At any rate, to those who were not here 2 weeks ago, did you get anything back today?
Mm-hmm.
What did you get back today?
Jesus Christ and worship and ministry.
Okay. So Jesus Christ and worship and ministry, right? Now, with some of you, I think you were here. I did go over that, correct?
Yes.
But I'd like to at least, some of these are much too important to deprive the rest of you of some of the comments that are called for. Let's make good time. On the other hand, I want to go over the sister.
Father, won't those who weren't here, won't they have the tapes of that class? And you go over it on the tape.
I mean, those who were not here.
Who were not here. I know we've been through all of this with tapes.
You have been through.
Yes, and they have too.
Okay, okay, okay. So then I did not...
go through this one on theology.
On theology.
Yes.
I did not go over that yet.
No.
Okay. So the quiz on theology, which... is that correct? I did not go over that. Very sketchily. Contemporary theology is very concerned to personally appropriate one's beliefs, which includes both internalized and personalized. Secondly, secularism...
Muslims don't have copies of this. Should we hand them out?
Well, didn't they take it?
They didn't take it. They
weren't here
last time. They weren't here last
time. Only a third of the class took the test that was here last time.
Well, that should have been given to them. Well... So,
we couldn't get the papers and just mark them so that we don't...
Please. Well, tell you what, let's distribute these at the beginning of the next class, okay? After the break, all right? All right? Now, even though we've gone over a number of these dogmas on creation, I would like to briefly recapitulate because there was much... Have you got tapes of the recording of the lectures?
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's at least catch up. How far did I go in the lectures? Up to seven, was it? Or
six.
Up to six. Well, let's at least
briefly touch on each one of these to make sure that nothing essential is missed, because, as you know, in today's world and in today's church, some of the most fundamental dogmas of the faith are being questioned and even denied. So we're not dealing with some academic questions here. Creation, first of all, out of nothing. Now that means out of nothing in two senses. Out of nothing from which God made, he started with nothing. And out of nothing of himself that passed over into what he made. So that we deny two kinds, by this article of faith, we deny two kinds of pantheism. The first, which says that everything which is simply is God. So that the world always existed. And that whatever we call creation is a figment of the mind, because God did not pre-exist what he made, so that there was nothing except God until creation. That's the first affirmation. And the second is, we deny the pantheism of emanation or evolvement, that there was nothing from God that passes over into the world, as though somehow, at the beginning of what we call time, God poured some of his being out of himself so that the world and he are really one. In the second case, that they are one because the world is a radiation, a pouring out, a sharing, a literal participation in the Godhead. Just before I left New York yesterday morning, I had class Thursday night at the university. One of my students, a convert from Judaism, gave me a little book that she received from a friend of hers, one of these Oriental religions, in which both these articles of our faith relative to creation out of nothing are simply denied. So everything that exists outside of God was created out of nothing, in that nothing existed except God before he created, and secondly, nothing out of God passed over into the world. And it's the second type of error that is becoming increasingly prevalent, including among Catholics today. This was the problem of my confrere, Chardin, who died as a member of the community where I live in New York City. Now, Chardin drips with piety. He's as pious as a Kempis, but he's a pantheist. In any case, that's the first. Second, motivated by God's goodness. Why did God create? Well, because he is good. However, unlike, just to make it clear, unlike the goodness that we are motivated by, the only thing that moves us to action is goodness. Something we like, what is good, that which somehow moves the will. Now, in our case, our will is always moved by good to be acquired. We see something good. It may be food or an article of clothing. Or, for example, we choose to walk out of the cold into a warm room. That warmth is a good. It is a good to be acquired, to be achieved. God, too, is moved by goodness, but not to obtain, but to communicate. Now we too can be moved by goodness in that way. And we are most like God when we are motivated by goodness, not that we get, but that we can give. God therefore is moved by goodness in order to share. He need not acquire anything because he cannot acquire anything. That too is a prime target of much erroneous writing these days, including some in Catholic circles. Third, God created for his own glory and to benefit his creatures. Now the glory that God sought clearly cannot be again the glory that he needed, but it is the glory that he wants. This is part of the mystery of God. God wants things without needing them. But just because he doesn't need them, let's not say he doesn't want them. This is an understandable prejudice we have, because most of the things that we want, we need. These are not cheap monosyllables. Most of the things we want, we need. There is no thing that God wants that God needs. But just because we have no personal experience of anything we ever want that we don't need. Name one thing we want that we don't need. Whatever we want, we need. So we've got to make an act of faith. There is a being who wants many things, but who needs nothing. Now we have some idea of that when we look at ourselves or at other people as they grow in sanctity or in holiness. The more holy a person is, the more like God, the more he imitates God in wanting to give, wanting to share, even though what we may get in return will be, humanly speaking, not that which naturally appeals to us. As Ignatius on one dramatic occasion said, the highest reward that a follower of Christ should look for from God is opposition, ignominy, and even death at the hands of those whom he serves. Well, you might say, even then we're getting something, yes, but then it's something that we don't want. But whatever we want, we somehow need. Unlike God. So that in glorifying God, he wants us to glorify him. What does it mean to glorify God? It means some people have the grace of office. God wants to be known, loved, and served. Those three words describe glorifying God. Does he need our knowledge? Does he need our love? Does he need our service? So that he would be less happy, less divine, would be blue, would be saddened. These are not obvious or rhetorical statements because, I remember, let me identify teaching the novices. Was it a year ago? Of Mother Claudia at Immaculata, and I was discoursing as I'm talking now to the novices. And I told them, just casually as I'm telling you, that God needs nothing. So one bright novice said, but Father, that's not what the Father so-and-so is telling us. Oh, you don't say. What is Father so-and-so telling you? Well, he's telling us that for too long the Catholic Church has been mistaken. And if we reread the Old Testament, we find that God does get angry at those who don't serve him. And he is obviously jubilant when people serve him. God does need our service. He feels better. He is better off when we do what he pleases, what he wants us to do. And he is saddened if we displease him by sinning. So I said, Father couldn't have said that. Oh, by that time, all the novices came to her support. And as only novices do, they had every word. They all said, yes, Father said so-and-so. And they even had the date, I suppose the time of day when he said it. So then I told them, well now, my dear sisters, Father so-and-so was wrong. Then for the next 20 minutes, I try to explain to them that one of the most insidious heresies that has infected the Catholic Church today is the heresy of a process God, of God who is still in the process of becoming more perfect. And the Paulists, a supposedly Catholic publishing house, are the leading exponents. If you want anything on process theology, you can buy it from the Paulists. In any case, that's why I traveled 1,000 miles to come here, hoping to at least share a bit of the awareness of what's going on with you and to give you some little solid ground to stand on. God wants the glory, and by God, he's going to get it. But he doesn't need it. A God who needs our service is not God who needs it. Then, it was in order to benefit his creatures, especially, of course, his rational creatures. Though in an absolute sense, every creature is benefited. Even a bird, the robin, doesn't appreciate it. Not many birds around. By the way, you know, the longer the snow is on the ground, the more birds starve. Did you know that? It's really hard on the birds. And nobody sympathizes with them. Number 4, all three persons, and not just as the apostles or all the creeds would seem to intimate, only the Father created. All three persons. Then, 5th, God was absolutely free in creating. In fact, it is God's creation that brings out divine freedom. Until he created, he did not exercise his freedom. Did he always have it? He did. Did he always use it? No. When did he start using it? When he began to create. How free was he? absolutely free. To create or not create. I'm always looking for empty chairs or seats in a classroom. It gives me a chance, as by now you know my habit. We could be the empty seats. Or better still, the space where even a chair, that's something, is present. In other words, God was free to either create or not create. He could have made us, well, what we're sitting on. And then the roles would be reversed. It could have been somebody else sitting and we would be the chair. Right? This is all good theology. So anytime you're moved to complain, just think of yourself as a chair that somebody is sitting on. And thank the Lord. Something else is the chair and you are you. God was free to create. Could he have created a better world? Now that is, for some people, a little hard to take. But a little examination of conscience, 3 minutes, would be enough. There's at least one person that we know could be better. You have suspicions about others. But you're absolutely sure this one creature could have been better. So much for freedom. Then God, what God created, is good. Why is it good? Because God made it. Well, that's not really maybe answering the question. What is good that God created is such because it corresponds perfectly to what his will wanted to make. And therefore in Genesis, when we read that God saw what he made, and it was not just good, but, remember, very good. Is there evil in the world? You better believe it. Let me ask this. Why is there evil in the world? Is it because of God? It must be because of what? Creatures. So whatever is good in the world is a result of God's will. Whatever is evil in the world is the result of created will. And can we ever produce evil things? If I further ask, what makes what man creates, if it's evil, evil? It's because it is contrary to the will of God. The essence of goodness is that it conforms to the divine will. The essence of evil is that it conforms to the created will and contrary to the divine will. And you don't push beyond that. You believe it. Then he created in time. This, I believe, we did not yet touch on even 4 weeks ago. Can you imagine? It's a month ago. No. Consequently, the world had a beginning in time. Or more accurately, it began with time. What is time, somebody?
Change.
Please?
Change.
Change. Well, change is part of time. Time is rather the measure of change. You've got to have things changing to have time. That's why God, in an absolute sense, is timeless. And the fewer changes, or the less aware you are of those changes, the more swiftly the time passes, right? It's when you're watching that clock. And it never moves more slowly than when you watch it. Because you're conscious of the change, whatever you're expecting or looking forward to seems to be so slow in coming. In other words, there was no time before creation. Why? Because the only being that existed was a changeless being. Since time is the measure of change, sometimes called the measure of motion, which is the more philosophical definition, but less intelligible because the word motion in philosophy corresponds to change in more popular language. Now the motion or the movement may be through space, and that's a change. Or the motion may be inside my head, and that's a change. For example, I hope in the last 5 minutes you've learned something, or at least in the last 40 minutes. Whatever change took place, and we can measure the change that took place, whether in body or in spirit, can be measured. Therefore, you have time. The moment God created anything, at that moment, time began. There was a controverted question in theology over the possibility of an eternal creation of the world. First, let's be clear. The world had a beginning. That is an article of the faith. The world, and not merely the world of space and time, but the world of spirit too, whether angelic or our own souls, began. That's number one. The world had a beginning. Secondly, it is therefore erroneous to say that the world is de facto eternal. Because if it began in time, it could not have been timeless in having always existed. But thirdly, can we prove from reason alone that the world began? Yes. A fourth question. Can we hold that the world might have existed from all eternity? Among the persons who held this was Thomas Aquinas. At least he said you could not disprove from reason the impossibility of an eternal world. This, among other things that Thomas taught, he was wrong in. And sometime after St. Ignatius prescribed on the Society of Jesus that we follow the teaching of Thomas Aquinas, it is part of our constitution in our teaching, a number of our theologians were wondering how literally we must follow Aquinas. So then, Father General commissioned Robert Bellarmine, a great saint and now since a doctor of the Church, to examine the writings of Thomas Aquinas, who by that time had already been canonized, and which things that Thomas taught, in his judgment, Jesuits would not be bound to hold. He ended up with 24 things in Thomas that Jesuits need not follow. This is one. and as I'm sure you all know, another is, that Mary was not immaculately conceived. Thomas held it. He was wrong. Which indicates why we need an infallible teaching authority to stand judgment even on a towering genius like Aquinas. Now, providence. We have three items regarding providence that bear some explanation. First, what we may call the providence of divine conservation. It is an article of faith that God continues exercising his creative power, that his omnipotence was not past tense, only exercised when he brought the world out of nothing. Now the same kind of divine power must continue to be exercised to keep the world from falling back into the nothingness from which it came. The same divine will that said, let there be light, let there be this, let there be that, and it was made, this will must sustain, except for God's will, nothing in the world would exist for the simple reason that the world would not exist. The world is kept in existence uniquely by the divine free will. That's why anyone, if they seriously thought on what they're doing when they're sinning, in disobeying the known, will of God, it's madness. I'm disobeying that will that keeps me in existence. And as we shall see when we look at sin, this is the great mystery. In my theology, there are only two ultimate mysteries of the faith. One in heaven, the Trinity. One on earth, man's liberty, freedom to say no to God. Takes no particular intelligence. All it takes is self-will. That's all. God keeps all creative things in existence. Second, divine concurrence. By that we mean that God cooperates immediately in every act of his creatures. This bears some emphasis because by now we've all had at least some philosophy or have read books on the subject in which we've learned expressions like that God is the first cause of creation. So he is. But that first cause of creation means more than meets the eye. In other words, say first cause may mean first cause of the being of something. Let's make it existence. Except for God, nothing else would exist. But also, except for God, nothing else could act, could do anything. Now, we're so accustomed, and understandably, to associate activity with everything which exists that we have to make a little mental effort to realize that God is the author of both the existence and the activity of his being, of his beings, those that he created. Now, happily, and this is one reason, frankly, the main reason, why God occasionally stops the clock. Why elevators don't work. Why healthy people get sick. Why prosperous people lose their jobs. Why people who are well thought of are disgraced. Why successful people fail. God wants to remind us that he's the author not only of our existence, but of everything that we do. Shall we still say we do it? But he is first cause not only originally, but continually. And this continual exercise of primary causality, keeping the world in existence, is another word for divine conservation. So correspondingly, God is the original cause, first cause, therefore, in enabling whatever exists to have any activity at all. A fire to burn, water to get things wet. Sometimes we are surprised. Water is supposed to burn. What did I say? Fire. Fire is supposed to burn. In case I ever need to, you know, keep you alert or wake you up, and I forget, the Lord allows me to get you back. Thanks. So that it's both the original existence and the original activity that the creatures that God made exercise. But correspondingly, as there must be, and this is the hard one, even as there must be a continual support of the existence of what God made, called divine conservation, so there must be a continual divine cooperation with whatever we do, and that is called divine concurrence. And that's a hard one, because among other things, there are things we do that are not good, right? Does God cooperate in what we do that is evil? Well, this is good for at least 3 hours of lecture. Insofar as it is evil, no. Insofar as we do it, yes. Yes. Having given us a free will, and that we see we are using that freedom to destroy ourselves or destroy others, and that, by the way, is the one thing we all have the power of doing. We have the capacity to destroy. And what a frightening capacity that is. In New York, when I ride the subways, just disgusting with the, you know, the painting, the marks all over it. It seems a building can't, before it's finished, it'll be totally defaced. Sprayed with paint and all kinds of obscene and you name it. They call them graffiti. And then stupidly, instead of doing something, they publish books in New York, selling for 12...